Cassie is straining for her notebook. We don't have to do one if you really don't want to do one.
It just feels like work. I've worked all day selling my wares.
Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I am your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie, and I know just the right amount about Doctor Who.
And eventually I will spoil it by making you know too much.
I already know too much. I don't like that now I can actually have a conversation with people about Doctor Whom.
Doctor Whom. <Yeah. laughs> Well, we are going to do a little bit more of, I think, your speed for Doctor Who, at least. Right before recording this, we were just talking about how much you enjoy 60s and 70s television.
Yes.
And today's...
Because that's what I'm from.
And this episode aired in 1967.
Hell yes, baby.
We're going all the way back to the fifth season of the show. With the second Doctor story, Tomb of the Cybermen.
Yum, 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 yum.
Yeah.
I love classic stuff.
Yeah. So, and this was, I put up a poll a few months ago asking people which classic Doctor they thought we should show next. And I surprisingly got a tie between the second and sixth Doctors.
Hmm.
Now, I think most people wanting to hear the sixth Doctor mostly wanted to get your reaction to the costume. So I decided we'll do the sixth Doctor second and the second Doctor first.
Zach, see, no doctors wore ties, only bow ties.
This doctor...
Don't patronize me with a laugh. That joke wasn't that funny.
I didn't actually get it. I was laughing anyway.
Because you said there was a tie between the second and the sixth.
Okay.
You said they didn't wear ties.
Now I get it. And now it's funny.
It's not.
So today we're going to go back to the second Doctor, because the second Doctor was the largest influence on Matt Smith's portrayal. Mm-hmm. Matt Smith has gone on the record saying as such. I believe he even said this story specifically was one that he used as the basis for a lot of his interpretation.
Interesting.
It's also one of the few stories that are complete. Like there are no missing episodes, there are no animated episodes. Like there are four complete episodes for this story. And so that's
what we're seeing is what you would have seen on the telly.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
I have the special edition DVD of it. So I think it's been cleaned up a little bit. But otherwise, it's basically what you would have seen if you were a little kid in 1967 and you wanted to see the Doctor.
Well, if I was a kid in 1967 seeing the Doctor, I would have run the other way because they didn't have lollipops in the office back then.
See, Cassie, now you found a good joke. Thanks. There you go.
Thanks.
So just to give you a little bit of backstory on the second Doctor. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, not really on the second Doctor himself.
We dipped our toes into the proverbial Doctor Who pool.
Yeah, but this is before Time Lords have been named. This is before Gallifrey has been mentioned. This was when the Doctor was just the Doctor.
He's just a quirky dude.
Yeah, he is. Like, there is no... They know he's an alien, and they know he regenerates because he's done it once. But otherwise, no. Like, the audience knows very little about this character in the same way that you and I know about him today. That's mainly all you really need to know for the character. I will also say that for the companions, there are two companions in this story, and they're both, I think, really interesting compared to our modern companions. Because they are both out of time, even in the context of the show. Like, neither of them are from 1967.
Huh.
The first one is a man named Jamie McCrimmon, who is the second Doctor's most common companion.
Mr. McCrimmon.
He was a Scottish Highlander from the 1750s.
Mr. McCrimmon!
Yeah, it's also worth noting the actor himself was not Scottish, so I will let you decide how good...
Mr. McCrimmon!
I will let you decide how good or bad his accent is.
If they had the chance to change his fate, Wouldn't he?
I think I've mentioned this before, but I do think you'll still find it amusing because you've probably forgotten. So back in the 60s, really through most of the early show's run, film was limited. They did not have an infinite amount of film to work with. So whatever they got on film is what they got. Sometimes there are flubs, sometimes there are errors, and they just have to go with it. So because of that, Patrick Troughton and Fraser Hines, who played Jamie McCrimmon, like to have a little fun with it.
Yes, we have talked about this.
So they would slipped in little implications that the Doctor and Jamie might have been gay for each other. If they didn't want to do something, they just wouldn't do it. they were professionals, but they were also like, we know what makes this better. We're not going to do everything you tell us to.
We're professionals, but also we are the experts on our characters. Yes. Therefore, you, the network, aren't going to tell us that we can't love one another.
Yeah, they were very much a male comedy duo in that way. They were scene partners. They were good at it together. The other character is a woman.
You could say they were in love. That's okay.
I haven't heard anything specifically saying as such, but if you told me they were, I would believe you.
I mean, you can be in love with your best friends, yeah. Zach.
The other companion is actually just starting the story. She showed up in the last story, and she's now joining the TARDIS at the beginning of this adventure. Her name is Victoria, and she is from Victorian-era London. So she is from 1866.
Could you imagine being named after the era in which you were born?
Named after the Queen.
See, my name is Meowchi, because that is the toy that was popular when I was I was born. Actually, I don't even know what
that's why popular. My real first name is Sir Mix-a-Lot, because I was born when Baby Got Back was popular.
See, but if you move the letters around, it's Sir Mix-a-Lot. You can kind of spell Zach.
if you ignore that they're letters and just view them as lines, you could move the lines around. So what might you be expecting from Tomb of the Cybermen, especially in a 60s context?
Big dumb suits! Big dumb suits!
Big dumb suits. What do you mean?
Big.
Okay.
Dumb.
Okay. I'm following so far.
Men in suits.
Gotcha. Now I understand.
Big dumb suits. Robot suits that are both big and dumb. Big dumb suits. What do you not understand?
Well, do you remember I showed you what the Cybermen look like in their very first appearance?
Guess what? I forgot.
All right. Well, this isn't their first appearance anyway. This is their, I think, third or fourth appearance.
Okay. So the audience, anybody who had been following along, these, I imagine that they would be more like serialized at that point.
Yeah.
Would know what a Cyberman is.
Yeah, this isn't a surprise.
This isn't how we're being introduced to.
No. The Cybermen actually were introduced in the last story of the first Doctor. So the second Doctor's experience with them was seeing them right before bursting into existence.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah, this is at least the third one. It might be the fourth one if I'm forgetting one, but I know it's at least the third story with the Cybermen.
Okay.
In fact, in the previous season, both the Doctor and Jamie had confronted a Cyberman already, so they both know what this is. It is Victoria who will be new to the scene.
So Victoria is me in this context.
More or less. Okay. Victoria is her first adventure on the TARDIS. Her last adventure was sort of her, like, setting up her character, dealing with her. She had a scientist father that was experimenting with time travel, and that summoned the Daleks.
I'm sorry. I've been thinking about names that you could have if you were being named after an era. And I have been stumbling around and rolling around Gilda Age. I say that more as a, I wasn't paying attention. I was thinking about names.
Maybe we can shift your focus a little bit if we get into the Cassie Brafassi for this episode.
I didn't think there was going to be one.
I figure, well, we mess up your count if we don't. This is your first time seeing what is known as a Cybermat.
Is that just a really cool guy that's very good at programming?
His name is Matthew, and he's a cool hacker.
Yeah, he majored in computer science.
Cybermats are an ally of the Cybermen. One idea that might even be said that they're sort of the same species as the Cybermen, but Cybermen aren't a species, they're made, so it's difficult to define that. I will let you know up front that they
Cybermen
are.
Cybermen isn't a place, it's people.
But a cyber mat is a small ally of theirs. I will let.
Oh, no.
So I'm going to let you just imagine up what you think a cyber mat is.
A little guy.
Can you get a little more specific, the little guy?
It's a guy that's little.
You think they look like a little man?
I think it looks like a little guy.
Like a tiny man with arms and legs?
No. No, it's a little guy. We've done this bit before, but I'm making it a remix.
I am going to need
Fast
a little.
Fast singing.
I'm going to need
hey,
a
little. Hey, no, you don't.
You have just like a shape.
Hey, no, you don't.
I need like a shape. Or.
If I say.
Or something that it looks similar to, or.
What's the opposite of humanoid? Like animal. Animalistic? Animaloid. Humanistic? Humanoid?
Yeah.
Is humanistic not a word?
Humanistic is a word, but I think it often gets mixed up with, there's a philosophy called humanism.
Ooh.
And so I think for simplicity, you could say humanoid or human-ish, and then animalistic is a, there, because there's no animalism, there's just animalistic, to my knowledge. So what do you think one looks like, Cassie?
I literally already told you. I sang it for you, Zach.
But I need a little more than just little
no,
guy.
You don't.
Especially because little guy is basically what I told you they look like.
Audience loves it. No, you don't need more. The people are on my side. I will call one of our patrons up right now and ask him, hey, does this count as an answer? And he'll just be confused. And ask me why.
But unfortunately, our patrons and our audience don't get to decide the dispersion of points.
I think we can make that exception. We can call up Jesse.
So you said animalistic. What kind of animal were you thinking?
I've already given you that descriptor, Zach.
No, so you're thinking a little man.
No.
A little human man.
Like a little fucking guy. Zach, we have done this bit already. That is going to be my answer. I'm not wavering on it. And whatever I'm wrong about, I will argue that I'm right.
So you're not going to guess any other features, just little guy?
No. An automat? Cybermat,
yes.
I've already said it's somebody who knows how to program computers named Matthew. That answer is wrong. I know it.
It's a little man named Matthew.
No. This is going to sound really, like, clueless.
Mm-hmm.
People were named Matt back in the 60s,
yes,
right?
They were named Matt back in the 60s. If you couldn't, in fact, they've been named Matt for a while because one of the books of the Bible is called Matthew.
Well, yeah, but they weren't calling him Matt in the Bible. That's Jesus's buddy, Matt. He's writing the gospel as
these Jesus's friends. That's Matt. That's Marky Mark.
Hey, that's Judy. Little guy, Zach, I don't know what you want. I don't know what more you want of me. You didn't get more before. You're not getting more now.
All right. So Cassie's saying that Cybermats just look like a little guy.
Yeah, because if I'm grossfully wrong, I will take the big L.
All right. Does mean I'm going to be a little more stringent on the second question, though. In the modern series, you have seen a cyber controller. If they're the ones that have their little, like, brain exposed to a
Thank
little window.
Thank you. I was like, was this the fucking remote from Click? I don't remember shit.
You know, this is...
the one that the Jimmy Neutron-esque.
Yeah, it's got its brain showing. However, they look different in the classic series. There's a different way to tell cyber controllers apart from the rest of the Cybermen. Would you like to take a guess as to how they look different from the rest of the Cybermen?
Oh, geez, Louise. See, now this I won't be upset if I take the L on because I can't think of anything worse than big old brain jar. Can I get, like, a hint or no hint? Because I dragged my heels on a...
You're not getting no hint for dragging your feet on a Cybermat.
I'm not getting no hint. Well, I'm trying to think. The only thing I could really, like, feasibly believe that they would do is make them, like, much bigger so that way there is a visual difference.
Okay.
Because we can't really use color to differentiate anything.
That is true.
Unless you have the Cybermen are silver and then this one is like jet black.
Yeah.
But I also don't think that that would be very interesting because then you wouldn't be able to get a lot of detail.
Yeah.
Unless you made his like facial features white and then it would be a little creepypasta nightmare fuel.
And the 60s would never do creepypasta nightmare fuel.
No, 60s were wholesome.
Nobody tripping on drugs back then.
They weren't allowed. You had 8 o'clock curfew, Zach. You couldn't be out tripping on drugs.
So you're thinking that you're thinking that the side controller is bigger? I'm thinking that
there has to be some like physical element, duh. But like if they have knives for hands.
They got big shoes. They got to stand up taller than everybody else because they got big shoes.
The cyber control, he's got a big dick.
That's what makes him different is he gets to keep his penis.
Yeah. Or boobies. Could have big old boobies.
Keeping that. Or both.
Or both. You can have tig bitties. Big, big energy. I don't think it's either one of those. I wish it was. That would be. There's a porno version of
that's
that.
That's definitely a porno version somewhere.
Absolutely.
You will be fuck graded. Bring out the cyber cocktroller.
It's just like one of those automated, like, you know, those ones that you can hook up to a video game.
Mm-hmm.
So that way it synchronizes its movements. That's just what the cocktroller is. What is a reasonable thing for cyber?
What would you, little Cassie watching some 60s TV, you look up and you're like, oh, that's later. And I know because they are blank.
Oh, my God. They have a crown.
They have a crown.
I think so. I think they have to have some kind of like, can I say special hat?
You may certainly say special hat.
I'm going to say special hat. So not brain necessarily, but they do have a special a hat.
Head.
Yeah, I will argue whatever that is.
Okay.
So we have animalistic little guy and a special hat.
All right. Well, we will find out together if a Cybermat is a little guy and if a cyber controller's
like
got an
animal.
It.
Like I
sorry, a little animalistic guy.
I will, cause yeah.
An animalistic like a little feral guy. And if a cyber controller just got a big hat.
Yeah, un sombrero, yeah.
As we watch Tomb of the Cybermen.
Sombrero especial.
For those of you who would like to watch along with us, I know in America it's available on Tubi. In Britain, I know it's available on BritBox. And I'm sure it's available on other streaming services for other countries. Because it's a show that's gone on forever. And they license it out to everybody. So we'll find out together as we watch Tomb of the Cybermen. This episode of Who Is My Doctor is brought to you by Artificial Unintelligence. I don't know how any of that is going to sound in the filter. I hope that's funny. God, I hope that's funny. If not, my life is over. And we are back from Tomb of the Cybermen.
Bang! I liked it.
I had a feeling you would.
If it has my favorite things in it, which I've been trying to really like keen in on what about like vintage television I really like, and it's the audio cues that let you know things are uneasy, like when you're in a new space and you hear the like wow, wow, wow. Sorry, Bean.
If I had to take a guess, I would say that for 60s television, the effort is much more obvious than it is now.
Oh, my God. Yes, it was the tactility of every set and the fact that there was no resistance in any of the controls they were pulling.
Yeah, like the way now TV has gotten so good that it's almost too good. It doesn't feel like it's made by people.
When I watch 60s and 70s television, it's like I'm going to a high school production that's really good.
Yeah, there were definitely some elements of that. Like, I think the acting was pretty good.
Yeah, especially acting for very the time.
I think the writing was pretty good. It was really funny. Some of the prop design was really good. I know you were really fond of the cyber mats the first time you saw them.
Oh my God. It's because fucking Jamie.
Hey, for heaven's sake, watch out until we know what it is.
Oh, it's as dead as a stone.
It killed me. I had to stop. We had to pause. Because I was giggling so much.
I think it also didn't help that the Cybermen they picked, it was littler than the later Cybermen that we see.
Cybermats, sorry.
It was littler than the later Cybermats that we see. So just the way they had tried to recreate it looked like it had little pineapple rings for eyes.
Oh my God.
And just like
so funny.
The tiniest little antenna.
It looked like the kind of prize toy you would get at a beachside arcade. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
And you could see now why I was hoping you would guess a description for me beyond just a little guy. I was really hoping you would like just try and fish some of that out of the ether.
I would have never said caterpillar.
Caterpillar with teeth all over its underside.
And I also think I get special points for special hat.
Because you do get a correct point for special hat because, yes, the cyber controller is most definitely wearing a special hat.
I would have gotten points for tall as well. Tall. But I think that I was really onto something with special hat.
Yeah, I had hoped that I could just like, I didn't want to like lead you into the answer, but I was hoping you would have found something when I was like, how would you identify someone being in charge? And you went crown and I went, there we go.
I like that my brain associates crown with special hat.
Yeah, it was because it was less like a traditional crown the way we think of it. It was more like a Pope hat.
Yeah, I was going to say like a cardinal hat.
A Pope hat covered in nerve endings.
Mm.
So, you know, looks like it should be ribbed for her pleasure.
Yummy.
But yeah, I mean, there was a lot of really good little moments that we liked. I liked a lot of a lot of jokes in it that I think were like blink and you miss it kind of jokes, which are often my favorite jokes. Where like when the doctor first sees a cyber mat, Victoria's like, what is this?
It's a cyber mat.
What's a cyber mat?
It's one of those.
I like too.
He's got like flappy hands, I think is one way I heard it described.
He's got flappy hands and Wallace teeth.
Yeah, and it's a very like affable portrayal.
And it's also really nice that he is literally very cheeky,
mm-hmm.
just both in his like delivery of things and because he's a very toothy man.
And Patrick Troughton was also good casting for the doctor in like this, because he makes a point in this episode that he's around 450 years old, which is so young compared to the 900 something year old we know now.
Yeah.
But there's a part of it where Patrick Troughton playing the character does simultaneously look very old and very young.
Yes.
Like it's a weird way to define him, but that is just kind of how he looks.
Well, I started falling down the AO3 rabbit hole because I had a realization of I now have a new fanfic I can look for.
Doctor Who?
Yes.
Okay.
And I stumbled upon some that were specifically to and Jamie.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I was like, I don't know, but I also really like their chemistry, mm-hmm. and I understood the more that we watched it, and the like,
they work really well together because one of Jamie's most like consistent bits, especially in this story, was Jamie doesn't understand something. Someone explains like the really complicated science behind it, and he goes, "Oh yeah, one of those."
The same thing I do.
He does it at least three times.
It's relatable in the sense that, like, I, as being somebody who does not like to admit when I'm wrong, if you're trying to describe to me where a place is in a city that I have, like, take for instance, if somebody's trying to describe to me where a coffee shop is in Long Beach,
mm-hmm.
two things that I know relatively enough about, but when you start pulling out specifics and I just go, Oh, yeah. I don't know where you are. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So there is a very like Jamie being from the 18th century, being paired with the doctor who knows everything. Is just a very fun like dynamic where, you know, Jamie doesn't want to admit that he knows nothing. But in the face of the doctor, he absolutely does, because almost everyone does.
Well, because then the fun thing with that is that Jamie has a perfectly valid excuse to not know things. Mm-hmm. But like, he doesn't want to be.
But he's a man.
Yeah. And not only that, he is a man from the 18th century. Mm-hmm. So there is a very specific, like, I do not want to say that there is something that I know nothing about. So he doesn't want to hurt his pride. But I also.
Jamie, you don't even know America exists.
Jeez, he doesn't even know.
You're from 1750. You're pre-America. I mean, you know it exists, but you don't know that the United States of America exists. There was one moment early on with them that I liked too, where because Victoria is from the Victorian era, where she probably wasn't even allowed to show her ankles, but they put her in like a more modern dress that goes to her knees.
That was another thing that I was going to say is I was having a little bit of an issue just with like how Victoria was being presented, mm-hmm. or like how she is, because she's introduced in her like gown. It's like a ball gown.
Yeah.
But then when they put her in this little dress and she's like, oh, I don't know. I went why didn't they put her in more adventuring gear? But then it occurred to me like, she's a Victorian era woman.
Yep.
Pants for her? No. Like, that absolutely would not have been a thing. Like, maybe if she were to have been wearing some kind of undergarment. But there's also a non-zero chance that the TARDIS was going to have modern leggings to wear underneath a dress.
Yeah.
Or pants. So there was something where I was like, I don't like this. She's a woman wearing a short dress. Then I went, she's from the Victorian era. Never mind. This is like the boldest thing that she's ever worn.
Yeah. I do like the way the doctor is supposed to help her get over it, though. It's just like, well, yeah, your dress is short, but it's longer than Jamie's is.
Yeah.
And Jamie gets all mad before realizing what the doctor's doing. And he's like, oh, right. Yeah, mine's much shorter.
I also just really like, because you'd pointed it or you had said it earlier, and I loved seeing it in action. Any little time where they're like holding hands for a little too long and like gently like slapping the other way.
Yeah, where the doctor pretends to grab Victoria's hand, but instead he grabs Jamie and they both like hold their hand up all curtsy like.
And like, I don't know if it happened in my, I'm metabolizing it still. But just anytime the doctor has the attitude of, I'll explain later, which I love, because that in for you and me speech means I'll explain when we're laying in bed and having our like nighttime recall of the day.
We'll talk in bed, honey.
Yeah, I'll explain another time. It's harder for me to talk about things that I really like.
Yeah, for sure.
It's just the, like, I get the warm fuzzies. I get the.
You're worried you'll talk your way out of liking it.
Another thing I really liked, the way that the Cybermen sounded, because I wrote, and I quote, scratches the same part of my brain as a really crunchy apple do.
You belong to us. You shall be.
Yeah, they have this. They have a totally different voice.
Well, because that one, series. I think it's the, and I'm forgetting which instrument it is, but it's the one where you like you chew the tube.
I think it's a vocoder. Is that what it's called? Silly past Zach and Cassie. It's called a talk box. Anyway,
all I could think about and all I could hear was 24 karat magic.
Yeah, I kept making Daft Punk jokes.
Yeah, it's so easy to do when it has that similar sound and
we
crunch.
We will conquer the earth. We will go around the world, around the world, around the world.
See, but you're not, there's no musicality to it. So it would just be around the world. Around the world.
You had clocked at one point that the cyber controller has an accent.
Yes, he did.
Because he would say things like, begging. Like he would just put an extra A in something. So it was,
which there's also something to be said of like, we are used to very, because like I would say in it, that as an American, we do have very crunchy accents.
Yeah.
Which lends itself really well to a monotonous robot voice. Just because it's very like hard and clear.
Yeah, we have a very enunciated manner of speech.
Yeah. Well, depending on where you are.
Yeah. In general.
And how clear you're wanting to speak. This is the clearest I've spoken all day.
Generally speaking, American English is a much like large
it's higher mouth. Up. Yeah, it's much higher up in the mouth.
Yeah, it's a much longer jaw movement for American English than it is for British English.
Yeah.
And so because of that, a lot of ours is more just naturally more enunciated, even when it's got a drawl to it. There's still some enunciation in there, even if there's some drawl to it. It just sort of depends on it's hey, obviously Zach, there's cases within the individual.
Zach, can you please say the name of your aunt, please?
Lisa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Lisa?
You seem to just be excited anytime the Cybermen started speaking in this story.
Well, because there's something else that I really, really enjoy, and it's the way that these that shows from this time sound, because I kind of brought it up earlier, but I really do love, like, it's not even the specific sound effects, although that helps, but it's the way that sound is recorded and then passed through modern speakers.
Mm-hmm.
That just, it just grabs a hold of my brain. And I do wonder if it's also because my dad was small boy during my dad was born a small boy but he you know
my dad
he,
was born a small boy
but like remember because he was born 1962
mm-hmm.
So by the time that he was at a very influential age or like a very easily influenced age is when you would have a lot of these types of TV shows that were on the air that really would you know, fill a growing boy's imagination. And so when me and my sister were growing up, whatever shows he watched as a kid were the shows that he showed us as kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do wonder if some of that has to do for me of like, this feels nostalgic, even though this is not something that I ever watched growing up. But because it just fits so perfectly into that world of other things that I know so well, it just feels like something that's like, I've seen this before, even though it's brand new, just because of the way that it sounds, the way that it looks, all of those things coming together to really make it something that I like genuinely enjoy. Aside from the part of the pacing is a little slow. And frankly, there were a lot of fucking characters in this one.
Yeah.
I forget that classic Doctor stories have so fucking many characters
mm-hmm.
because in modern stories, you have your companions.
You get maybe three.
You have like your companions. So let's just say like max, you have the Doctor, two companions, and then one ally in the story, and then maybe four antagonists.
Yeah.
This one had like 80.
And usually just even to reduce it down, some other like peripheral characters might pop in at the beginning, but then they'll die almost immediately for easy pathos.
Yeah, or they're the like they are responsible for delivering exposition and then they disappear.
Mm-hmm. You had mentioned that the second Doctor has like a Wallace quality to his teeth and manner of speaking.
Yeah.
Here's a fun fact. The voice actor for the Cybermen in this was a man named Peter Hawkins. And before... During production for the first Wallace and Gromit short,
uh-huh.
Peter Hawkins recorded a voice track for Gromit before they decided Gromit's not going to speak.
Excellent.
So you were sniffing something out you didn't know about.
Yeah, I mean, Aardman also is another one of those things that I look at so fondly.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something else, too. It's not only the way that everything sounds, but the way that people speak.
Yeah.
And the, like... cadence of 60s and 70s television.
Mm-hmm.
I did have to make a note to myself because at one point Jamie sounded a lot like my favorite Caped Crusader and I had to go, no, Cassie, that is not Burt Ward.
Holy strawberries, Doctor, we're in a jam.
I would not put it past him. That is 100% something. Jamie would have said it. I did like the line specifically of the doctor talking about his special technique, which was, quote, keeping my eyes open and mouth shut.
Which was especially cutting to Klieg, whose whole thing was that he's like, he thinks he's the smartest man in the room. And meanwhile, then this guy comes in and he's just like, oh, no, I've done all the math problems for you. I opened the door for you. I'm the smartest guy here, Mr. I'm the leader of the logistics, whatever.
I've solved the door puzzle. You're welcome.
Let's talk a little. I know some of your favorite things about all 60s TV is the effects that they use. Because there was a lot of those. There's a lot of little effects in here. You had talked about, well, not even about the sound effects. I was talking about the visual effects, because you had talked about Cybermen being in big, dumb suits.
They were indeed in big, dumb suits. And they also had kind of a cool honeycomb set.
Yeah, I like the little, because that set, I think, is supposed to be reminiscent of, there's an old movie from, I think, the 30s called Metropolis, which has a very, like, Cyberman-y kind of element to it, where it's about a man makes an android that can make itself look like a beautiful woman that drives men crazy.
Isn't that just weird science?
There's also elements of Metropolis and weird science. Mm. But this is from 1939, I think. I could be wrong. I'm sorry.
Okay.
But it's called Metropolis. It's one of those like film school nerd movies that you watch.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's a good movie, but I think it's even in the silent era before there was sound. And one of the things that they have is they have a factory or a men workout that's built very similar to that honeycomb design. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if it was, if not a direct reference, at least inspired by that sort of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
I do like that they have the Cybermen have a ladder that they get down on both sides.
Yep.
I like that for some reason they're just encased in bubble wrap.
I like how dexterous these Cybermen are, because their suits are made out of windshield cover or sunshades.
Yeah, and that you could definitely see the zipper on the back of the Cybermen.
Oh, you could see the seam down the center of the Cybermat too.
Yeah, just one of those.
And there's a part of me that's also like, they get a pass because TVs were not high definition.
No, they were not. They weren't putting things on DVD. They were going out once, and no one would even be able to rewind and be like, wait a second. Like, it was just once on a little TV, and they didn't know that in 50 years we'd be all watching this on a large screen television.
Once on a TV whose screen was no bigger than my laptop screen that I'm watching sound waves enter into.
Yeah. One of my favorite effects, though, was in the very first episode where they turn on the hypnosis screen, I guess.
Oh, my God. I love the hypnosis screen. But
they never really explain why they had a hypnosis screen.
Nope. If I had to make an assumption, that's the antechamber to take people into before they become Cybermen.
Yeah, maybe. Because it was in a weapons testing room. That's why I was confusing. But it was kind of amusing.
Multifunctional room.
It had all these different settings and different like screens that would pop up. Like it was a Windows 95 screensaver.
Oh my God. The Cyberman that like pops out. It's just a suit. So like it gets a pass for being so jiggly.
Yeah, it just slides out on a dolly and just stands there in the middle. And then for some reason, they've set this thing up just to get shot in the head.
There were so many characters in this episode. I truly cannot remember anybody's name except for Klieg and Toberman.
Krieg, Toberman, Mr. Viner was one of them. Mr. Viner was one that was kind of interesting because he was an archaeologist that seemed to be afraid of ghosts. He was an archaeologist that didn't want to go on an archaeology tour.
He went to archaeology for the same reason why kids in the 80s or in the 90s wanted to go into archaeology. I mean, 80s, I guess, because
every time they were going anywhere, he was like, oh, don't go in that room. It's scary. There could be a Cyberman in that room.
Literally me.
Yeah. It's just like, why are you here?
Me.
Don't like this job. Go get a different.
Me. Horror aficionado. Also me. Scared of the dark. There are two sides to every coin, Zach.
Yeah, but you didn't go to college for 4 years to study horror movies.
I went to college to study theater so I could make horror. I just make sales, baby.
Yeah, it's just that was the only one where I'm like, why are you here? Why are you naysaying everything?
And then the woman that also has a servant.
Yeah, her manservant Toberman.
Also, so hot.
Silverman?
Yeah.
Yeah, because
my God, he could just lift me up with one hand. Just
shaped like a Dorito.
My guy's so strong, so tall.
That guy's built like Chris Evans, Captain America.
So tall, so strong, but also dealt with the being the only black man in a
60s TV show.
So he
60s
just,
British TV show, yeah.
So he only knows like three words.
Oh. He's only allowed to say three words, yeah. I mean, he does get to be kind of the hero at the end of the story, which is nice.
Well, yeah, he has his own little redemption arc after his person gets shot. The white bitch, whatever her, not Victoria. There were only two ladies in this.
Captain was her name.
Like, there.
It's a D&D ass name.
So that's where I suppose this is where we can kind of start jumping into what I didn't like. There were too many fucking characters, and I wasn't entirely sure why they were wanting to resurrect the Cybermen. I understand that they were out and about in the desert looking for them.
So the archaeologist did not want to resurrect them. He was specifically trying to find out what killed them. Klieg, however, is like the head of the logicians, which really just means mathematics group.
I heard magicians.
Yeah, they were part of the logicians, something or other. Basically, they're a bunch of smart guys that think they should rule the world, but. And while they're all really smart and they probably have influence, they don't have true power. Basically, he's Elon Musk.
A stupid imitates stupid.
Gonna resurrect a Cybertruck.
Ugh.
Yeah.
God, the Cybermen would really like the Cybertruck, though.
I don't think they would. I think they'd be like, this will explode.
I like its form. Very uniform. Very unique.
Would be better if it had teeth on the bottom.
I like that it looks like it can go through the snow, but it cannot. It will get stuck so easy.
Until the snow gets high enough, it can be a toboggan.
It cannot do the things that other trucks can do.
But on the other hand, it's much more expensive.
And it's made out of stainless steel. Did you know you can put refrigerator magnets on a Cybertruck?
But there's an element of just like he feels entitled to run everything because he's really smart, which is also why he's got such animosity towards the doctor who shows up and is immediately smarter than he is because he's threatening to him.
Mm-hmm.
So they just like, oh, if we wake up the Cybermen, they'll want to be our allies because they're also really smart, but they have the power that we want. They can help us take over the world.
And they immediately get shot.
Like, yeah, they're immediately like, oh, we don't need, we just needed some, we knew that if we made like a puzzle, someone really smart would want to come in here and solve the puzzle. And if they were smart enough, but it would take a while, long enough that, you know, we could nap for 500 years and then wake up with enough energy to kill you. Or turn you into Cybermen.
Mm.
So basically, it was all hubris. The villain of every science fiction story. Yeah. The villain of all science fiction stories, hubris.
Mm. You know, I used to go to school with a kid named Hubris.
Huey Briss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then he had two other brothers, Dewey Briss and Louis Briss.
And their uncle, Donald Briss. It feels weird. I don't think we had that much to say because we just kind of enjoyed it. It wasn't like... It's not going to change anyone's lives, but it's a good, like...
Now, I do think that something that we can bring up and talk about a little bit, just because you had mentioned it before,
mm-hmm.
and I was trying to do the academic thing of, like, clocking it and seeing if I could make a connection.
Mm-hmm.
So you had said that Matt Smith had based a lot of how he portrayed the Doctor off of how Troughton just... portrays the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't seeing a lot of it. I was kind of hoping that maybe you could illuminate.
I think a lot of it is in the way they speak, not necessarily like in the accent, but there's a lot of like talking really fast, answering someone's question, even if you don't necessarily want them to follow through on the information. Like there's one point where Patrick Troughton takes the math, helps him figure out what the math is, hands it back. And he's like, but please don't open the door. I've solved your problem. Please don't open the door. Then he does it anyway. And there's a lot of like talking very fast, being like doing your best to be the smartest person in the room, but not in a rude way, just in like a I'm smarter than you.
Because the way that Troughton plays the Doctor reminds me more of how I imagine, like, a Gene Wilder would have played the Doctor, which is like, I am the smartest person in the room. Just don't cross me. Like, there's a part of me that would like to see maybe more of Troughton to see if I can pick up on those nuances. Mm-hmm. Just because I...
There's also a lot
This Doctor felt very, like, not cool, calm, and collected, mm-hmm. but, like, Matt plays the Doctor very neurotic, mm. and I identified him as being, like, very squirrely. Mm-hmm. Justin is like, oh, I'm doing a thing, but now I'm distracted. I'm going to float over here and do this other thing. But John doesn't really do that very much.
Mm-hmm. And also, there, for one thing for sure, is there's a lot of talking with the hands. Like, Troughton would do a lot of his, like, flappy hands, and Matt Smith would also, like, rub his hands together a lot.
Ooh, the rubbing hands sound. No, please stop.
Some flappy hand ASMR. I wonder how well that'll pick up.
I don't care.
Yeah, I definitely could see some of the overlap. I don't think that it's like
he's not doing an impression.
Yeah, no, he's not doing an impression. But there are, like, little isms that he took from him. Like, the flappy hands is a big one. I think a lot of the, like, when he, like, talks, there's, like, a wobble to them both. Where it's, like, they're almost, like, they almost can't stand still.
Because, like, the other thing, too, that I've been noticing more and more is just that... And it could be because we, at this point in time, like, no... He's the second actor to have played the Doctor. The Doctor doesn't seem like too big of a hoity-toity know-it-all, mm-hmm. like later doctors seem to, where they are the smartest person in the room.
Yeah.
But Troughton just kind of feels more like a savant in that way, where he's like, oh, yeah, I'm also, not to mention I'm the smartest person here, but, you know, we don't have to talk about that. We can just, you know, look at these bugs.
Look at these cyber bugs. These calipers.
Let's stop them from rolling towards us very slowly by putting a pole in their way. God, their little RC car version of those fucking bugs, though, really killed me.
God, I saw you getting really excited about the little one that was, like, in Victoria's bag.
Well, because I wanted them to treat it more like a puppet, where it was just going to appear, like, floating around on a set piece.
Mm-hmm. Instead, it, like, fully chewed through her bag and, like, crawled through that way.
Which is also really funny. I like that there was one and then there were dozens.
There was one little one and then three huge ones, like the size of your feet.
There were several of the big ones.
I don't
know how they had the money for that, but there were several.
I think they only had three and they just filmed them at different angles. No,
there's the part on the when they do like do a wider shot of the floor. After the Doctor pulls the tubing over to, like, block the way. Yeah, there were, like, five.
Okay. I mean, maybe I misremembered. I could have sworn it was only three.
There were, like, five to your three.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but I like going back to this classic stuff. I think we're going to do it more often.
I certainly would appreciate it. I love classic stuff.
Yeah, we're going to do it. We're going to do another one next episode, actually. Next episode, we're going to get our tiebreaker episode with the Sixth Doctor. We're watching a story called Terror of the Vervoids.
Vervoid sounds like an app.
Well, we will find out all about what they're on the next episode of Who is My Doctor?
Who is my... Actually, it should have been Who is My Doctor?
Who is indeed... Howdy do, buckaroos. Thank you for joining us as we dive into the classic era of the show for a bit, because I've got a couple more lined up here before we get back to Series 6. If you're looking forward to that, be sure you're subscribed to this podcast wherever you're listening now. If you'd like to suggest some classic stories for us to check out in the future, send us a message over on Blue Sky, Twitter, Threads, or Instagram at WIMDPOD. That's WIMDPOD. If you'd really like to support us, you can get episodes of this podcast early for as little as $1 a month over on patreon.com/whoismydoctor. I'd especially like to thank our Big Daddy Dalek patrons, Andrew Blewett and David Gansel. Next week, we're checking out the Sixth Doctor and his coat of many colors. So we'll see you next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Whose Days.